Science fiction is an existential metaphor. It allows us to tell stories about the human condition. Isaac Asimov once said, individual science fiction stories may seem as trivial as ever to the blinder critics and philosophers of today. But the core of science fiction, its essence, has become crucial to our salvation.
Tell me, how many lights you see?
There are four lights!
So this is how liberty dies. With thunderous applause.
Game over, man! Game over!
Welcome to the Sci-Fi Diner Podcast. I'm one of your hosts, Scott Herzog.
And good evening, I am Miles P. McLaughlin.
I'm Chrissy Raffensperger.
And tonight, we are here to discuss a very classic movie, a movie that I actually did not hear of until Miles brought it to my attention. And Miles, what is the name of the movie that we are going to be watching or just reviewing tonight?
So we are reviewing the 1980 film, The Final Countdown.
Da-da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da. Devil's Horns, come on. Also 80s, but I think that came out later than the movie.
It was a few years later.
Yeah, but... So you said this came out in 1980, correct?
Yep, and when I first... I didn't see it when it first came out. Maybe it dropped in theaters where I was, I'm not sure. My first foray in this movie was seeing it at my cousin's house. On their Betamax player.
Ooh.
And I think I watched it a couple times. I thought just it was, even as a 14-year-old kid, I thought this movie was amazing.
That is amazing.
I did not exist at that point, so there was definitely not playing in theaters where I was.
No, definitely. I didn't watch it again until you mentioned it. But Dave, you said you had watched this movie prior, right? Yeah. So, Miles, obviously this connects to you because, again, for those of you that aren't aware, Final Countdown is actually a time travel movie. Can you tell us a little bit of what the premise of this movie is?
The premise is a modern aircraft carrier is thrown back in time to 1941 near Hawaii, just hours before the Japanese attack on Pearl Harbor.
Yeah. And they have a chance to do something about it. Yeah.
Another thing this movie showcased, I mean, some might say this is like the Navy and the Air Force's promo to like, hey, join the Navy. You get to serve on these cool aircraft carriers or in the Air Force, you get to work with these cool fighter jets.
That is false advertising. There is no time travel at the U.S. Navy.
That you know of.
Very one-star review. There has been no time travel.
Yes.
In my entire 10-year of the Navy service.
You wouldn't even know it if there was.
Well, maybe it's top secret.
They control the weather. They control your mind. Why couldn't they control time?
I mean... Very advanced.
Very
US
advanced.
Navy.
Very advanced. So let's talk about this movie. This movie, of course, we're watching it, what, 40 years later? After it came out a little bit more than that, and we're looking at this, and I mean, I think the special effects obviously don't necessarily hold up real well, but as far as the rest of the movie, the way it plays out, what did you guys think watching it again? You know, all these years later, how did it hit you, Miles? Since you are a lover of time travel, I think you should go first.
Yeah. So it's going to be no surprise that I love this movie. I think the special effects, it's just enough. I was trying to find out how they made this movie, and it's a simple fog with laser light, and the effect is just enough to make you believe that the ship is being sent back in time. It's just a plot device. The time travel part of it is, we don't know what this thing is. It's just a device that sends them back. And we'll bring it back later on, but I think the story holds up. I think it asks you know, the what ifs. This is something that only sci-fi time travel stories can ask interesting questions like, okay, if we can, should we? And, you know, watching, you know, this civilian contractor and, you know, these naval officers wrestle with, okay, should we have an opportunity to intercept the Japanese fleet before they attack Pearl Harbor? Should we do this? And they come to the conclusion that yes, we still serve the commander in chief. We still serve the United States. We're gonna do this. And but to me, it still holds up. It shows people from 1980 interacting with people from 1941. People's view of the world versus other people's view of the world bumping into each other. That's always interesting to me. That's something only a story that science fiction can tell, is just bring people to from different times and, okay, what do you do? So, I think it's still a great story to tell. I don't know how younger people today would feel watching this. But for me, just as a sci-fi fan and exploring time travel, I think it's great. Now, unfortunately, it didn't take the risk of, okay, let's see them go after the Japanese fleet. What happens afterwards? They couldn't do that. I think maybe this movie was made today, maybe they would have explored it, because now we have there's newer theories of time travel where you don't necessarily, travel to the past. You create an alternate timeline by going to the past. It's a branching timeline, so it's like you can do whatever you want and not affect the original timeline. I've been reading a lot of time travel novels that sort of explore that, you know, if you bring modern technology and civilization to the past, what does that look like? What is that, you know, what happens after that? So that would have been more interesting to me to see what happens. Okay, what if the Nimitz with its modern military might, you know, what that battle would have looked like.
Right.
The people, the actors, it's an all-star cast: Kirk Douglas, Martin Sheen, plenty of other actors from the past that we know and love that were in this. I can't say enough good things about this movie.
Yeah. So yeah.
And we'll say,
go ahead.
There's only one slight criticism I have, is that they didn't explore was, okay, we're in the past. Does that mean we're stuck here? Does that mean we'll never see our families and loved ones again? They never dealt with that. And maybe if they would have made this movie today, they would have had some kind of thing like, explore that. Can we go back? Are we never going to see our families again? And so they kind of just blew that off in this one. That's a nitpick. It's not, that doesn't ruin this movie for me.
All right. Dave, tell me about some of your thoughts about this movie.
Well, kind of piggybacking off of Miles here, I'm kind of glad they didn't go to explore that kind of stuff. The whole thing really felt like they were just still trying to figure out just what the heck was going on. And until they finally realized it, I don't think they had enough time to really try to process those kinds of thoughts. And I'm kind of glad it didn't, because this movie for me, I'm a big Martin Sheen fan, especially a lot of his work around this era in the 80s. Always liked a lot of his stuff. Instead of like a today's time travel movie where it's filled with all kinds of sciencey stuff and tech and the futuristic kind of things, this was all modern day, and they just got pulled back in time through a freak weather storm. Which was really cool. But I just enjoyed watching them, the decision and realization that we still have a job to do. We know what's about to happen. We know who the enemy is. We know what they're going to do. And we still have a duty to defend this, regardless of anything else. We're here now.
Right.
And that was all very kind of unique, because we didn't have the big, big debates, like, that you see a lot more now in time travel movies. Like, they had it, but it didn't come off as the same as it did, as it does today. But no, I really liked it. I mean, 1980s military movies were some of my favorites growing up. My dad watched a lot of that stuff, and this one always just kind of hit home with a little sci-fi twist to it.
Well, yeah, and this was, you know, in full cooperation with the U.S. Navy. And I was reading up on it. They actually said that the U.S. Navy used it as recruitment for the Navy in the early 80s. So
nice.
I still say it was false advertising.
Fair enough. Fair enough. We can see that point. We can see that point.
People are like, I signed up to go travel in time. There's been not one crazy instance of weather time travel. I demand a refund for my all expenses paid cruise.
You got to get it in writing, Chrissy.
Okay, well, if anyone ever tries to recruit me to the Navy, I'll be like, listen, am I going to be time traveling? Because if not, I'm sorry, but, like, no bueno.
Another thought occurred to me. When this was made, we were still going through the whole Red Scare with the Soviet Union, and they explored that a little because the sailors are asking, hey, did we just survive a nuclear war? What's going on here?
Right.
And so the movie's a product of its time because this is what, you know, people were still afraid of back then and maybe even a little afraid of now. But that was interesting. See, the top brass didn't necessarily tell everybody what was going on. I mean, they didn't necessarily know, but it was, you know, the grunts and the, you know, the enlisted people are like, hey, you know, when's a captain going to tell us what's going on here, you know?
Yeah.
So that was kind of interesting watching, you know, and it's a big ship, so there's got to be, I don't know how much staff, how many sailors, but it's got to be 1,500 people on that ship, I would think.
Yeah, what did I read? About 100 of the extras were actually in the Navy? I think I read that somewhere or something.
I heard that you, yeah. They used
some of it, so. Yeah, it's interesting. So, you know, and I think them going through while it's a convenient plot device to have them go through like a weather portal, right? And to have it conveniently still be there after many days later, right, is kind of an interesting plot device. Yeah, I mean, it's not that time travel hadn't been explored, but it's certainly the first one I've ever seen an entire, you know, aircraft carrier goes through a wormhole like that or something like that. And so that was interesting, but
3,200 officers and enlisted are the average company of a Nimitz. I can't say that tonight. I'm sorry, guys. Nimitz. Thank you, Duncan. Class aircraft carrier.
Okay.
Well, so that's probably a little bigger because the Nimitz class didn't come around until post-World War II, oh, no, maybe not.
Well, even this,
they were built and started in 68, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I was like, well, I mean, that's the advertising. So, yeah, like 3,000 people just get, like, transported, like, missing back in time. And they still have to hear, like, I thought it was an interesting thought experiment. Like, for me, that's mostly what this movie was, just like kind of a thought experiment. I'm like, okay, if they got transported back in time, what would that look like? Because it felt like a lot slower than most other, like, the most modern movies. Like, in a modern movie, I feel like they would just, like, really quickly figure it out and spend, like, all of, like, 5 minutes on it. But this, like, got really drawn out of, like, okay, wait a minute, what just happened? All right, we'll send out a scout and then bring it back. Okay, well, that's weird. Let's find more evidence. You go over here. All right, let's test our theory. If this theory is correct, how would we know that it was correct? Like, and it takes them a long time to kind of, like, put all the pieces together and then all collectively come to the conclusion of, yes, we have traveled back in time. And, like, the fact that, you know, they transport, they don't know what happened, and he, you know, basically calls everyone to, like, battle stations because we're not sure what just happened. We might be, you know, about to do battle with something. So I thought it was really interesting to see, like, that kind of process, because I feel like that would be the actual process, and I don't feel like we see that a lot of times. I feel like there's so many times where you're, like, watching movies, and you just, like, skip steps, and it's just, like, really convenient, like, plot things. So, like, I thought it was interesting that it didn't like skip steps. But then that also didn't leave a whole lot of time to do things like, okay, we've now destroyed the Japanese fleet. What are the consequences of our decision? Which I feel like a lot of time travel movies now like focus on like, okay, you've now done this thing. What are the consequences? Versus just the like, what would happen if we put a naval ship in the middle of this situation and then magicked it away before like they could actually do any damage to the timeline? Because it feels like a very different kind of movie. And at first I was like, I'm not sure what the point of this was, other than this is a thought experiment. It's interesting. I liked it. But, like, there was no character progression. No, like, at least I didn't think there was all that, like, there wasn't, like, massive character change. There wasn't a big reveal. There wasn't this lesson that needed to be learned. You know, a cautionary thing. It's like...
Yeah, the only real character reveal you had actually came at the end.
The paradox.
Right.
Yeah.
Mr. and Mrs. Tideman will see you now. Like, and she got the dog back, okay? That was the important thing. The whole movie was about a woman getting her dog back from a terrible, terrible Japanese attack.
And it didn't even really age a day.
Yes.
It's an old dog.
Yeah, so, I mean, you have some of those things, right? What do you think of the acting itself? We're in an early 80s time frame. Obviously, it has the sentiments of an early 80s film. How do you feel the actors, especially some of the notables like Kirk Douglas, Martin Sheen, Catherine Ross, James Tarantino, and so on?
Exactly as you would expect from the time period.
I almost feel like Kirk Douglas, he was at a place where he could play himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's okay. It works for him. I mean, you know, if you're an actor and, you know, it's, you know, just certain, it's like Jack Nicholson, that movie, As Good As It Gets. It's about this neurotic OCD guy, but it's Jack Nicholson. But did you ever see that one, Chrissy?
I did.
Okay. So, I mean.
Is that the one with Helen Hunt?
But as far as the acting in this film goes, it was fine. You know, there's nothing wrong with it. I mean, it's nothing that's going to win an Academy Award for, you know, I don't know if these roles really stretched these actors. I think it was, you know, it gave them a good paycheck and maybe hopefully they had fun making the movie. But, like Dave said, what do you expect in it? 80s movie like this.
Right.
And it never fails. Every time I watch this thing and I see the credits coming up and I see, oh, Kirk Douglas. For whatever reason in my head, I'm expecting to see Michael Douglas.
Of course. Right.
And then, well, I see him go, wait, he looks too old. Oh, yeah, that's right. That's Kirk. Never mind.
And seeing Martin Sheen here, I mean...
I was watching it and I kept being like, I know this actor. I know this guy. Where do I know him from? Because, like, I'm used to seeing him much older. And so, like, I'm like, what? And then the whole time, you're like, what? Who is... Like, I should just Google it. But, like, it was more fun to sit there and be like, where do I know this guy from? Mm-hmm. And, like, trying to, like, think of his name, like, the whole time. First, I was like, Michael J. Fox. I'm like, no, it's not that one. I was like, but it is a Michael. But who?
The other Michael.
No, I'm just thinking how much Charlie Sheen...
Yes.
Charlie Sheen is like a clone... Of his father.
Oh, yeah.
It's that tiger blood, baby.
I was going to say, minus being a warlock, though. He's not a warlock, he's a drinking tiger blood.
What a fun era that was.
That was a fun era. I mean...
We got to see a little bit of battle between the Americans and Japanese. I mean, it wasn't so much, you know... We got to see the F-14s play with those Japanese Zeros for a minute, and then... When the Japanese start shooting at them, it's like, can we take these guys out now? You know, just so, I mean, they made short work of them, but it was, we finally got to see a little bit and, you know, get to see, you know, this Japanese pilot, you know, not just him, but just see other people from 1940s interact with.
Someone's cat does not like what you're saying. Just saying. Miles.
It's not my cat.
It's mine.
No.
I think it's, I don't don't know what's going on with Orion right now. He's having a problem.
He is.
But we got to see a little interaction between people from the 1941 with 1980. It was kind of cool seeing this senator, and I assume he was a fictional character, but just, you know, him knowing what kind of military might the country had, and he sees this, and he's like, you know, he's blown away by it.
Right. He's like, I'm on the committee for the Department of Defense, and I've not heard of this nonsense.
It did strike me when watching him, when we first encounter him on the boat, about how some of his behavior toward the female that was on the boat with him wouldn't fly in today's society.
I found something else that wouldn't fly in today's society.
Yeah,
I did wonder about that because, like, it meant just like, oh, well, people think that we're sleeping together. And I'm just like, I don't know that they would have said that in the 40s. I felt like that was more like an 80s insert into the 40s. So I because even like their clothes struck me as a bit 80s. I was like, I don't think that that's how they dressed in the 40s. Like, I just, like, it struck me like as not really like authentic 40s. Which I wasn't going to complain too terribly much about the fact that I'm like, I don't think that they behaved back then. That's how they behaved in the 80s. So, right. Which is interesting because if you think like the 1940s was 40 years from the movie and we're reviewing it 40 years later. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of it was just interesting that just the behavior. I thought, well, this is not, but then again, while it may not be authentic, is this, and maybe, I guess you certainly wouldn't have seen that sort of behavior on movies or television back in the 40s. So if you want to go there, but maybe in the early 80s, late 70s, this sort of thing you would have seen.
I mean, I do think that people will still whisper today, like, oh, I think that they're sleeping together and that's why, like, she's got this job or that or the other thing, because people are just mean that way. And so they might have whispered it to each other in the 40s, but not actually said it out loud. So, I mean, take that for what you will.
There was another un-PC moment in this movie when the one, I'm not sure, radar officer or whatever, but he's a Native American, and he goes up to the captain, and the captain's like, are you doing any unregulated rain dances again? You know, just like, it was funny, but it was just like, people are so sensitive now that...
Right.
Yeah,
his name Black Cloud.
It'd be an HR.
I thought it was a nickname at first, and then I was like, "Oh, is that like his actual name?" Or like,
I'm not sure that it's not a nickname.
Oh well, then
I don't know. I mean,
I don't think you can. I don't think that you can say that these days. I don't think a great nickname.
Well, you would be surprised.
I mean, like, it depends on, like, I'm going to say, like, it depends on the context of the people and who you're working with and everything else, like who you can do. I'm just saying that in a movie, you would not see it today because it would not be considered an appropriate nickname to depict on a film. Now, maybe you're picking up my dog barking. Apparently, the animals at this house are just not happy tonight.
No, apparently not.
Pixel's barking, the cat's saying no. Apparently, I didn't give them enough treats. I don't know. There's insurrections.
But I think, you know, this wouldn't have... If they would have filmed this scene today, there would have been some things like, dude, that's just not cool. That's very culturally insensitive. And, you know, that could take you know, meeting with HR if today.
I don't even think that they would have, like, even had that little thing in the movie at all, because I mean, if it was sanctioned by the Navy, I don't think that they would allow the Navy to be depicted that way, is what I'm kind of saying.
Good point. That's like, yeah, we don't, yeah, we, it's like that.
The guy that played Black Cloud was Victor Mojica, born in 1933 in New York City, and he does not, I don't think he is Native American at all.
It kind of implied that the character was
right,
yeah,
yep.
Maybe he's just always in a bad mood.
Maybe. He was in Johnny Firecloud, Blood In, Blood Out in 93, and Final Countdown were three most notable movies.
I did get real excited when they picked up the Japanese pilot. I remember watching it for the first time, and I'm like, oh, it's the sensei from Beverly Hills Ninja. This is awesome.
I've never heard of that movie. I have now learned a new movie, Beverly Hills Ninja.
Ninja? Chris Farley?
No.
Oh, dear, you have to watch this. It is gold.
Is it a science fiction film? Can we review this one for the night?
No, it's a Chris Farley comedy.
But I like it because it's, you know, it goofs on martial arts in some way. I mean, Chris Farley plays a ninja.
Well,
Beverly. What is it called?
Beverly Hills Ninja.
Ninja. Okay, sorry. It was
hilarious.
I like Chris Rock's in it.
We were wrong. We were very wrong.
You were very wrong. Yeah.
It's got a 14% on Rotten Tomatoes. What kind of crap are you sending me?
Do I need to go on my rant of reviewers again?
It's a 5.5 stars out of 10 on IBDM or IMDb. Sorry. Only a 2.6 on Letterboxd? I don't know.
You won't be disappointed, Chrissy.
No, it is gold.
Oh, it has Chris Rock in it. Oh, never mind.
Oh, he's great in it, too.
You should have just said Chris Rock, and I'd be like, oh, well, of course I'll watch that.
Chasing that chicken.
Oh, you guys are obviously reminiscing down a movie I've never seen.
Apparently, we need to watch it, Scott.
It's not sci-fi. We can't watch it.
Well, you can watch it. You and Kiefer should watch it together.
Oh, apparently.
Oh, Kiefer will get a kick out of it.
Yeah.
Do you know this movie that we're reviewing was rated one of the top worst movies of 1980?
I mean, to be perfectly honest, though, if that is true, then I need to watch more movies from the 80s because if that was the worst one.
From 1980. The year
that must have been one stellar year for movies.
Who's the reviewer that you this from, Scott?
No, so this was in. Let me see if I can find it again.
Well, yeah, okay. So you're coming out against like The Shining, The Empire Strikes Back, Raging Bull, Airplane, Blues Brothers.
Didn't the Star Wars movie? Didn't the Star Wars movie come out in 80?
He just said. Strikes
Back, oh yeah, thank you. I wasn't listening.
I was gonna say something about his wife, but that would be mean.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you had a lot of tough Friday the 13th was in 1980.
I stand by my earlier statement. That was a stellar year for movies.
Yeah.
And the movie industry could learn something today by 1980's example. I'm just saying that this was the worst movie of that year.
It did make the top 20 aerial dogfights in movies.
Well, see, okay, so if the worst movie of a year makes the top 20 aerial dogfights, I'm going to say that, like, 1980s is kicking 2023-24's butt when it comes to movies. Like, clearly, they were doing something right back then.
Well, all they'll do then, they'll look at that and decide to remake all the movies from the 1980s.
That is not what I said.
I'm a Hollywood producer. That's what I'm hearing.
Listen.
I'm going to get J.J. Abrams to direct them.
Yeah, that way when they go through the portal, there'll be more lens flare.
Yeah.
Exactly. There'll be so many more lens flares.
Well, for a movie that was supposed to be one of the worst ones in 1980, it made money. It made its budget plus $4 million. So for 1980, you know, for back then, that's good.
So you said it made $4 million.
It was budgeted at $12.5 million and box office was $16.6 million. Yeah, I'm not sure. I mean, I don't know if – maybe I'm speaking that term. Maybe that's not a success financially. Just at least
– I don't know. That would have made $15 million today.
I don't know that they would consider that too much of a successful movie, though.
I mean, they're probably hoping it would have made more money, but, you know, it paid for itself and then some.
Yeah, but I also don't know, like, what the average movie was grossing back then.
Consider, like, okay, in the decade, look at the 1980s as a decade. I mean, there is a ton out of there. Like, the top grossing movie, I think the top grossing movie... Oh,
Empire Strikes Back.
Empire Strikes Back. They made $290 million. So it made, this one made some money, but compared to that, the same year, you saw where everybody was going.
That is true.
It probably made some more money after it was released on VHS, too.
Yeah.
That is also true.
And VHS rentals, I would think.
Did you watch, did you guys read through any of the continuity or factual error stuff?
I have not, Scott. What
so I'll just pick out a few here because I don't want to belabor the point. But one, before the storm, the carrier captain orders the destroyer escorts back to Pearl because there's no need for them to go through this. In fact, no carrier battle group can send its destroyers back for any storm at all because these escorts form the main defense against submarines, which are the most dangerous threat against the carrier and which are not affected by any weather conditions.
But it's okay because they went back to 1940s.
Yes, exactly. The Jack Benny program, to which the crew listens to Saturday the 6th, December 1941, did not air on Saturdays but rather on Sundays. The content of the show is correct for Sunday, December 7th, of 1941 broadcast, but would have been broadcast in Hawaii in the following week due to the recording of the show being shipped to Hawaii by boat.
So what I just heard is we had evidence that they were already in an alternative timeline.
That's what, exactly. You got it.
It's just, it's the little details that really make a movie, Scott.
These are, so I'm going to, here, got it.
I don't even know what to say.
It is. So here are revealing mistakes. When we first see the yacht that the Zeros later destroy, there are two bow ropes attached to it, and they are both taut. The yacht, supposedly in the middle of the ocean, was tied up to something. When the Japanese pilot seizes the M16 of the nearest marine, he hits the man in the chest with it. As he does, the gun visibly bends, indicating it's a prop made of rubber.
You know, sometimes you go into alternative timelines, like physics gets a little bit funky, okay? Like this, you're in an alternative timeline. That's just how this works.
It was just so strong, you bent the weapon.
That's right.
Exactly.
Here's one other one. The barricade is rigged and raised before the Nimitz goes through the time storm the first time. But in all the shots of the ship going through the storm and emerging from it, the A7 is actually until the A7 actually lands in it, the barricade is not seen.
Again, they were going through a time portal.
Stuff clearly does.
Time distortions during the transport.
Yeah.
It would cost enough to film around the carrier to begin with. And give away all the military secrets.
So true. Especially in the 80s when the Russians could have been watching.
Well, they were. They had that fishing trawler that they were all just kept making fun of at the beginning.
Oh, yeah.
That was kind of funny. I did think that.
The only other thing I thought was interesting, and this will be the last one I share, is when the movie was made, the Nimitz was based in Norfolk, Virginia. It did not make it to the Pacific till 7 years after the movie was made. The principal photography took place at the Naval Air Station, Key West Naval Air Station, Norfolk, off the Florida Keys, over 2 5-week periods in 79. Scenes in Pearl Harbor consisted of mainly stock footage, with most of the final countdown exteriors shots on the Nimitz while at sea and dry dock for interiors.
Yeah, I was curious how they made it. So, and none of it was in Hawaii, which is understandable.
Anyway, so this is those are some things in that, but I don't know. So I guess the question I have is, does this movie hold up 40 years later?
It depends. Go ahead, Chrissy. I've been yapping enough.
I was just going to, considering all the issues with Russia lately, I mean, I think you could show it to a modern audience, and I'm not sure that they would know the difference. Like, oh, look, the Russians are looking for us, half joking about the state of the world. But I would say in general, it does seem like it holds up fairly well. And I did think that, as I was watching, I was like, oh, it seems like it holds up fairly well. I mean, the Navy uniforms look a little bit dated, but, and I wasn't sure if they still do the color coding of the crews like that. Mm-hmm. Do they still do that? Mm-hmm. That's really clever. That's a good thing. It's a good system. They should keep that.
That's right.
That's my advice to our U.S. defense.
That's right.
Even the uniforms haven't changed much while they're on ship on duty. I mean, I get, the movie itself, like the storyline, the story holds up pretty well. I mean, I think it's a great story. I would love to see a new version, like a modern version of it, and let them use, you know, today's special effects technologies and that kind of stuff to do it again. I think that would be really neat.
Better yet, I think put it into like an alternate timeline where the Japanese have actually won.
You're just a lone ship out of time.
Yep. Having to try to get back.
I thought we agreed we didn't want them to do remakes.
Well, it's not so much a remake as it is a reimagining.
That's right.
Okay, like you can dress up a turd, but it's still a turd. Like, no remakes.
Yeah, but it'll be a shinier turd. With some lens flare.
If only your connection is better, I'd love to see the disgusted face you're making at us right now.
Listen, this is not that crab apple trophy that we run to get, okay, in Lancaster County, where you get a real Amish-made crab apple.
I had like four or five of those. They were hanging in my room for years.
It's still a golden turd, okay, from a horse. It's still horse shit.
Yeah, but it's a shellacked golden turd.
Oh, and truly comes the bitter.
It is. So for those of you who don't know, in Lancaster County, we have a half marathon called the Bird and Ann Half Marathon. And if you run that and the Garden Spot one, you earn what's called the Road Apple Award, which is a plaque with literally like three clumps of horse poop on it that's shellacked, and you get to display this for all the world to see.
Hey, you earned that.
I earned that shit. And I feel that I tell that to myself. I tell that to myself every day I go in and teach. I earned this shit. Exactly. And that's just the way it is.
I want to find one of those and replaque it and hang it in the office, my office, and just put somebody else's name on it every week.
Yeah.
Who did the worst? Who did the dumbest thing this week? You get the crap award.
Yeah, so let's go ahead and rank this movie, and we'll do it out of 5 stars to kind of wrap up our conversation of it. Miles, let's start with you. You picked the movie. Where does this movie rank for you when you think about it?
I would give it 4.5 stars. The visuals, while old, still look great. I mean, this is a aircraft carrier's prime, modern fighter planes and jets. I think the visuals look amazing. Good cast of actors in this. You know, the dialogue is very PG, though. We know if this movie's made today, that you know they would be more freer with colorful metaphors, I'll say. Especially, on a ship. I mean, that expression "curse like a sailor" is there for nothing.
Correct.
But
I learn how to curse from a sailor, FYI.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
That, that's a fun fact about me.
There you go.
Fun fact for Chrissy. But I think the story as a science fiction story, as a time travel story, I think that holds up. I think it goes. It asks the challenging questions of, hey, we're in a position where we might be able to change things and change it for the better. Can we? Should we? And so that's some of the fun parts of science fiction, time travel science fiction is, you know, what happens if we change the past for the better? Also having people from 1941 interact with people from 1980, that was fun too.
Right.
That's just so. As a science fiction story, I think it holds up. As a movie, if you show it in your classroom, I think maybe some of your students will probably think it's kind of lame, but I think as a story, the story being told still holds up.
Right.
And it's a fun romp down memory lane. See these actors 40 years younger. And,
so I think part of what you're saying is the nostalgia is the appeal, at least for you, Miles.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Very good. Very good. Chrissy, how do you rank this movie? Where does it fall in line for you?
I mean, as I've said before about my star system, like it's more of a standard distribution. So for me, it's just like a 3. It's right there. in the middle. It's not like, it doesn't stand out to me as stellar, great, it's enjoyable, I'd watch it again, but it's not like if someone said, hey, do you want to watch a movie? That would be the first movie that would come to mind. But if Miles said to me, hey, do you want to watch it? I'd be like, sure, it's decent, it's good, it's enjoyable, it's not bad by any stretch of the imagination. So, yeah, nice right there in the middle, 3 stars.
Okay. Dave, how about you?
With a solid 3.75. Only because I think I've watched, I can't say I've watched them all, but I watched many, many, many movies, military movies from the 70s and 80s growing up, and I can't think of one off the top of my head that I disliked. And it's, well, this is one, obviously, that I said I've watched multiple times before, and I'll watch it again down the line, I'm sure. But it's not one that sticks in my brain as I'm looking to watch a movie and go, oh, I know which one I'm going to go. But I enjoy it. I enjoy it. I love the story. It ranks up there as good to me.
Good. Good. I think for me, while I'm glad I watched a movie, it's not a movie I feel like I need to see again. And not that if we, like, 50 years down the road say, hey, let's watch this movie, you know, I'm not saying I wouldn't watch it again, but it's not the one that I'm going to gravitate to. I think for me, I ranked this about 2.5. I think most of our science fiction today, and I blame Star Trek for this, especially from Next Gen on, is we try to give an explanation, even if it's just technobabble, as to why why an event is occurring and why it occurred. And I feel like what this rift in space was nothing more than just a vehicle to let's throw a modern ship, a 1980s ship, back into 1940s, and let's go have at it. And so I guess for me, like, the science part of science fiction, like, this is really much more of like a fantasy story than it was science fiction. And so I guess for me, it just didn't hold up. And I think too, it's the same feeling when I try to watch some of the early seasons of The X-Files. And that was, I don't know, mid-90s. It just feels ponderous at times. And I think it's a pacing thing. And maybe I'm being, in all honesty, we watch stuff much quicker these days. And the pacing is much faster of the movies. And so there's the slow build and the slow burn, while appropriate for 1980, when you're coming to a movie fresh now, it's like trying to show my students 2001 Space Odyssey. Fantastic movie, but it's like watching paint dry on my walls, you know? And now, even though I enjoyed the movie and I grew up as kind of a late 70s type person, that there was a part of that even now I go back and watch it and it feels a bit ponderous. And I felt that about this movie at points. And not saying it's not quality and not saying that it doesn't explores interesting issues. Like, if we had the chance to go back and change our past, should we? Because who are we without the pain, the turmoil, and the trauma, and the good and the bad of our past that have helped define and shape us, right? So it's asking good questions, and I'm not faulting it for that. So my faults lie, I think, elsewhere when I talk about it.
I find it interesting that the thing, like, one of the things I actually enjoyed about the movie is the thing that you are saying I don't, like, you didn't like. Like, I liked the slower pace, and I liked that it was like, oh, it actually is going through the actual steps of what would, like, of how you should have, like, would approach it, and that they wouldn't just instantaneously skip and be like, we're in 1940s now, like, after literally 2 minutes of screen time.
Right.
Because I actually watched the movies, and I'm just like, oh, come on, that is not how this works. Like, where's the time? Like, stop and think through this, guys. Like, please do not give me techno babble right now. I do not believe you. So I guess maybe I should watch more, like, movies from, like, the 80s and 70s, apparently, because I guess that's more my speed. Which I also don't always enjoy, like, how, like, short form videos, like, stop giving me, like, literally 2 minutes of information and then, like, no context and no supporting evidence. I do not like that.
Yeah,
I mean, even like YouTube Shorts now, they're like,
yeah, ridiculous. I acknowledge all that's influencing probably my sentiment, and I want to say that I did appreciate the way the crew was trying to figure out what was happening. Like, that felt like somewhat realistically. Like they assume they're in the present. They don't assume they've gone back in time. They've come through a storm and out the other side. Why isn't no one contacting us? Why is the radio band here? Like they aren't thinking in anything but that they're in the present. And I think that makes it somewhat fascinating as a film. So
that's why I said, like, it was interesting. Like, it seemed more like a thought experiment, which I like thought experiments. It makes for a different kind of plot because it doesn't have the same rhythm of most plots, because it's kind of like, here's this thing. And then just as they're about to do something that would actually, like, really change and alter the timeline, they get randomly ripped back. And then there's, like, zero follow-up. And you're like, oh, wait, that's it? We're done now? But, like, where's the... How did this happen? And they didn't figure it out. And what did they change something catastrophic? And, like, they didn't even realize that they changed the outcome, even though, like, they got whipped back in from, you know, the 40s back to the present. Like, what's going on? And so right. What's the conversation? Like, the time, there's so many things, so many unanswered questions. But right. That kind of makes it more fun in a way.
Those are my thoughts. It's interesting. So. But Miles, thank you for suggesting it, and I am glad. I say that all that I am glad to have watched it. Just not my favorite movie, which it doesn't have to be. It doesn't have to be. I mean, if we all like the same movies, it wouldn't be a very exciting world. That's for sure.
But we wouldn't have very interesting conversations.
Yeah,
I would have nothing to be salty about, and it would be sad.
It would be sad. All right, well,
life is more fun.
Yeah. Any other thoughts before we wrap up the show? This has been a good conversation talking about this movie.
There should be more time travel movies. There's a drought of them.
We could watch Time Cop. Van Damme.
Maybe.
Good old Van Damme movie. Yes.
No, I'm just kidding.
I would not say no to that.
There was a Jet Li movie that was time travel. What was that called?
The One. I think that was
it's called The One.
Multiverse.
What?
Yeah, it was a multiverse one.
Yeah.
That's something we could look back at too. I'd watch that again.
Yeah, but 8 Miles, slap the word time travel on it and you'd watch it. It doesn't matter. But
what's your point, Scott?
No, my point is
he's like, I hear no lies. Yeah, right.
Yeah,
now.
Like he's, what are you, like, trying, are you trying to insult me or something? No. No.
Like if someone's like, Chrissy throws like a girl, I'd be like, okay, and I'm yes. a woman. Like,
yeah, so it makes sense, how am I supposed to grow? Yeah, call a spade. No, I get it. But yeah, well, very good. Well, thanks for sharing, everyone. And listeners, we would love to hear your thoughts about this movie. We were going to do listener feedback eventually. We do have to get to that because we do have some listener feedback that we haven't talked about that we should talk about eventually, but that's all right. Well, I think that's about it. Any other thoughts before we head on out of the show?
Seeing some, you know, lost treasures from the 80s. I think there's still more treasures in the 80s we can dig up.
Yes. All right. Well, with that being said, we hope you enjoyed the show. And if you have any of your thoughts, we'd love to hear them on Facebook, Instagram, and anywhere you can find the Safe Diner. And Miles, why don't you take us out of the show?
All right. Till next time, good night and good luck.
We'll see you.
Leave your tips on the table.
And go boldly. The Sci-Fi Diner podcast on Instagram and Facebook and YouTube. Send us your listener feedback to sci-fi-diner-podcast@gmail.com.